Well, they've asked me to talk about weed problems on the horizon. I don't know if I can see that far. Dr. Reynolds and I have been discussing our lack of ability to see very far here there these days, but sort of look in the crystal ball a little bit. You know, they always say that you're supposed to start out with some sort of a joke or something to lighten up the crowd a little bit, to try to lighten the mood a little. But I thought I'd just ask you a question as we start into this. Get this thing set. Now, as an extension specialist, if he takes out his watch and looks at it when he starts a talk and lays it here on the podium beside him where he can see it, what does that mean? Does that mean he just got a new watch, or he's concerned about the time? He thinks it looks professional? He's just trying to kill time because he didn't know a joke. Or does it mean absolutely nothing? If y'all like to, you can use your clicker and answer that one. Let's see why you answer it. Let's get our clickers out and let's work on this one. I think we probably are moving through this pretty quick. Dan, let's see what we've got here. Everybody answered it wants to. Let's see what we've got. Well, as you probably have realized by now, that there is a correct answer to this. It means absolutely nothing. So we do have an expert panel that's coming up here in just a short period of time, and I'm going to be through with this, and we're going to move through some of these and talk about them as we go. I do have some questions I would like for you to answer. As we think about resistance other than what we've talked about so far with Palmer Amaranth, I want to just see, use your clickers here and let's answer this one. What year was the first weed confirmed resistant to glyphosate in the United States? Not worldwide, but United States. What was the first year that it was defined in the United States? Now remember, when was Roundup Ready soybeans introduced? 1996. Roundup Ready cotton, 1997, 1998, depending on which part of the country you may have been in. When was the first glyphosate-resistant weed confirmed in the United States? Got them answered?
There's still, looks like a few more still coming in.
Boy, some of you are a little bit indecisive out here. We're not going to give a grade on this. Y'all go ahead and get on it. It's not going to be a grade. All right, so the answer to that one is 2000. That's pretty interesting to know that we got resistance in year 2000 when Roundup Ready soybeans was introduced in 1996. Now, how many weeds have been confirmed resistant to worldwide? Now, this is one you should know because Dr. Culpepper already showed you this list earlier today. I know you took notes. And if you've taken good notes, you know that the answer to this one is, and we got everybody answering?
No, not yet.
Not yet? Well, now our technology man's let us down over here.
You're asking me too fast.
But with the resistance issue, now when did we say the first one was in the United States? It was in 2000. And I can tell you that I think that's pretty close to right that the first one worldwide was somewhere in the mid-90s, maybe 93. But in the length of time that we've had glyphosate out and Roundup Ready crops, obviously we have proliferated the resistance. So with that, the answer to this one is 15. So there are 15 weeds that are confirmed. Now, does that mean that's all they are? Probably not. Because some of you probably have a situation at home that's going to probably change this number within the next short period of time. Now, let's continue on. How many are resistant in the United States? We talked about 15 being worldwide. We've only had glyphosate we've had glyphosate longer than that, but in our Roundup Ready crops and all, we've only had Roundup Ready crops since 96. What does that mean to us in terms of how many are confirmed resistant in the United States? Have you answered? Go ahead, click it. You've got an answer picked out. There is a correct answer to this, is how many is confirmed. That does not mean how many there are, because I am almost 100% positive that the number is larger than what's confirmed. Because as Dr. Stanley said, Dr. Culpepper said, what we have to do is once you identify it, we take it to the greenhouse. We have to go through the process of collecting the offspring, the seed, growing the offspring, and confirming that the offspring are that resistance is conferred through the offspring. Then you can say it's confirmed resistance. So where are we on this? That how many you guessed? All right. We've got some correct answers out there. All right. You're doing good, Bob. I'm proud of you. Now, let's keep on through this. So you've got 9 in the United States. How many in the traditional cotton growing areas? Now, is it more, is this the concentrated area? Or are the all of the resistance out in the orchards and in the other areas of our cropland? So how many are in our traditional cotton growing areas? Ready? Now go. Now we got it up. Everybody can vote. Got it voted?
Not quite.
All right. I know what they do. I can see it in some of you. Y'all waiting for me to give an answer where y'all can click it. Y'all are about like some of my students. The answer to that one is 8. 8. So most all of the weeds that are resistant to glyphosate in the United States are in the traditional cotton growing states. Hello. Hello. What about the Mid-South? Some of you from the Mid-South, and those of you that are from Texas, this is your opportunity to say, hey, it's not our problem. In the Mid-South, how many have we got? Are we ready to vote? Not ready to vote. Now you're on the traditional cotton growing stage. It's thinking.
You're just talking too fast, Ken.
I've never been accused of talking too fast before in my life.
All right, they
vote. Now you can vote. I may have to write that one down. How many of you think you did? Seven out of the Mid-South, 8 out of the cotton-growing states. So that means we're not doing too good a job, huh? I'm sorry, what did it? What are the weeds? I do have that on a slide, but I can show those to you. I think I can show those to you here in just a second. So here's where we are. Where are we? We've got 15 that are confirmed resistant. We've got 9 in the United States, 8 in the cotton states, and 7 in the Mid-South. So that means we're not doing as good a job as in the Mid-South as many of the rest of you in the cotton growing area. Why is that? Because we have relied heavier on Roundup than you have in the high plains. Those of you in the high plains have not adopted the Roundup procedures or the technology as much as we have. And you have continued to use residual herbicide and all a little better. Here they are. Here are the 15. Or so that are in the United States. I mean, in the world. Now, the ones that we have in the Mid South, obviously are Palmer amaranth, common ragweed, giant ragweed, horseweed, the Italian ryegrass, and Johnson grass. And those are the ones that we have in the Mid South. Now, are in the southern U.S. Now, giant ragweed is a major problem in the Midwest. We're seeing some of it come in. This has always been one that we've always thought, well, it was not a major problem even before Roundup, because it always stayed on the side of the ditches and things like that. Why did it stay on the side of the ditches? Because we were plowing out in the fields, and giant ragweed does not like cold steel. Once we went to conservation tillage, this ditchweed moved out into our fields, and we're seeing much more giant ragweed now because it has moved out in the fields with conservation tillage. So those are some of the things that we see. You remember me? Yeah, you do. And you remember, how many of you remember the recirculating sprayers? Yeah, there's some of you old enough to remember those. And this was the weed. This was the weed that brought in the recirculating sprayer with glyphosate. And then we went to the rope wick and sure antiquated it pretty quick. So we've come back now to look at this with now a confirmed resistant biotype of Johnson grass. Now, will it become a major problem? How many of you have got Johnson grass in the field now that you see it? A few of you. A few of you do. Now, if it becomes resistant to glyphosate, then obviously you know what the population will be very soon, unless you do something different. We've always had the ACCAs, well, not always, but for many, many years we've had the ACCAs, the over-the-top grass herbicide. We could never actually eliminate Johnson grass with those herbicides. But once we got into the glyphosate program with multiple applications of glyphosate, this just absolutely has evaporated from much of the landscape. We do not have a tremendous amount of Johnson grass in our fields now. But if it becomes resistant, then certainly we may have. We have one confirmed location. So what do we see on the horizon? Johnson grass may be one of those. May certainly show a resurgence of Johnson grass. Annual ryegrass. What about annual ryegrass? We got some confirmed location. This particular picture, we do not have this in Arkansas confirmed. You think it's resistant? What's all the brown around it? You know this has been sprayed with high rate of glyphosate. No, it's not confirmed. That's what I'm talking about, the difference between what's out in the real world and what's confirmed. We talk about the 15 that are confirmed. I don't know how many there are out in the real world. Now, Mississippi State has confirmed this as being a problem in Mississippi. And it's on the website saying, yes, we do have a problem in Mississippi. This is one that can cause us major problems if we cannot control it with glyphosate in the spring. Now, some people say, well, it's always been hard to control, and certainly it has been. But with higher rates and earlier applications, we've been able to control it. This is their, right out of Weed Technology, this is their comments, is that it's a 3X population, 3X, threefold population. The Tribbett and the Franchisi, how you pronounce that?
Franchisi.
Populations were threefold more tolerant than their susceptible one. And so what does that mean? Is it resistant? Yes, that fits the definition of being resistant, and if we cannot control it with a 3X rate, then obviously we're not going to be able to control it. All right, a couple of other things, risk assessment, which in the Canadian prairies. I want to show you some things that's in this particular article. This is published in Weed Technology in December, the last issue, October, December 2008. Agricultural practices other than herbicide use can affect the rate of evolution of herbicide resistance in weeds. You believe that? Sure, we believe that. There are other things, crop rotation, all of these things, cultivation, et cetera, can do it. So that's not revolutionary. Weed resistance was also greatest in conservation tillage systems, and particularly in low soil disturbance, no-till. Now, what did we do with Roundup Ready crops? It allowed us to go to conservation tillage. Our conservation tillage has just grown dramatically since we have started using Roundup Ready crops. Yours has too. Uh-oh. The other thing that Roundup Ready has allowed us to do is to farm more acres with less equipment and less labor. And our farming, I went back and looked at our agricultural census, and every size of farm in the category less than like 2,000 acres has decreased consistently since we introduced Roundup Ready crops. Every category that had more than 2,000 acres has increased. We've seen about a 30% increase in the number of farms greater than 2,000 acres since 1998. So, yes, we are farming larger areas. Large farms, why? Large farms had a greater risk of weed resistance in smaller farms. Why? Because there's not enough eyes on the ground in this particular acre. We're doing it with big equipment, we're doing it fast, we're less efficient on a given acre. Now, we're more efficient on the big farm, but we're less efficient on a given acre. We do not manage that acre as intensely as we did. Now, this is a challenge to you guys as consultants, because this is a real problem. When we see this type of numbers out here, or this type of statistics, it's a real problem and a concern that you guys look at these and bring it to the farmer's attention, because he is not seeing each acre as well as you should. And you can be a real asset to him by identifying some of these much earlier than what he's able to do. Other, just as we go through a sort of a literature review, lamb's quarter didn't say resistant. Notice it said management of glyphosate tolerant. Now, that just means it's really hard to control. That may mean that this changes to resistance, because lamb's quarter is one of those that you would suspect, and we'll talk about why. So there are techniques that they're proposing here to manage tolerant lamb's quarter. Now, the other one is responsive to northeastern Arkansas Palmer amaranth. We've talked about Palmer already. What's noteworthy about this publication is that the authors are really outstanding authors. I don't know if y'all caught that or not, but there's some really, really important and high-class authors on that one. But it says that, yes, we do have pigweed in North Arkansas that is going to be missed when you spray it with glyphosate. Not revolutionary, we knew that. Sustainability and stewardship of glyphosate and glyphosate-resistant crop. This is from Doug Salmons and group, and look at this. Resistance prevention strategy should first consider the mechanisms for resistance. How is it resistant? Does it not translocate it? Does it not carry it to the target site? Does it not absorb it? Or once it gets to the target site inside the plant, is that target site altered and then thus not letting it work? Metabolism and exclusion, or metabolism and low rate of absorption, provide lower magnitudes of resistance. So if you get a weed that has absorption or a translocation mechanism, you can overcome much of that by rate. Increase your rate, you get more. percent control. Target site resistance, if that target site has changed, it doesn't make much difference what rate you use. You're not going to control it. You know, until you salt it out at 8X or 10X or 16X or whatever. How many of you remember the first ALS, the first staple, the first glean, the first ALS chemistry resistant weeds you saw? Where it be in the high plains with kochia and wheat. You remember the first ALS resistant pigweeds in Arkansas, lamb's quarter, all of them, that ragweeds that have become resistant to the ALS chemistry. You remember how they looked? You might get just a little bit of yellowing in the top, and the rest of the time you couldn't tell you sprayed them. That's target site. That's target site, and ALS chemistry is very susceptible to target site resistance. Now, what about glyphosate? Where are we? Crap, we don't know. We don't have an idea. We've looked at it, and we've done all of the tests that we think is supposed to be for target site, and we can't prove that it's target site. We've done all the absorption and the translocation, and we can't prove it's absorption or translocation that's causing us the problem. But I will tell you that I think, as you look at this, we've got multiple mechanisms. I propose we have multiple mechanisms. Now, that's significant from a couple of standpoints. One is that Palmer's going to be a real problem for us. And two is that if there are multiple mechanisms out there that's causing the resistance, then we've got much more chance of seeing more and more resistance as we go on. Look at the distribution patterns of these. Now, the one on the right of the screen here, in a single spot. Now, you know that's the offspring from a single plant last year. That's pretty evident. Those were a single plant last year, dropped the seed, that's those. You can spray these with 8X, you'll kill 2 or 3% of them. The ones on the other side, where the distribution is scattered throughout the field, we get an increase in control every time we spray, but we never get them all. That sounds more like an absorption translocation problem as opposed to a target site. We can't confirm that, but I propose that we do have multiple mechanisms at work here. I think that Mississippi State has also talked about multiple mechanisms within ryegrass. Now, if that's the case, and we confirm this, people, we still got work to do. I guess that's good if you're a weed scientist. That means you got job security. I don't know. But it also means that we're going to say, I don't know, way, way more than we're accustomed to. Now, hair fleabane, notice the genus there, Kanaza. What else is Kanaza? Horseweed. Horseweed will continue to spread. I think if we look at the spread of horseweed, it went from North Arkansas to South Arkansas in a matter of 3 years. Now, how did it spread? It wasn't by pollen. It was by seed. It just floats, and it goes. And it's a tiny, tiny little old seed, and every one of them will germinate twice. I know they do. There's too dang many of them for them to just germinate one. So, but we see these going from one end of our state to the other in a matter of 3 years. Now, somebody has already said that weeds know no boundaries, they don't respect state lines, and they don't know turn rows, etc. They do respond to different cultures, and certainly as you move further south and further east and west, etc., our culture changes. But those of you in Louisiana, Grady, get ready for it, because it's coming. And you're going to have resistant horseweed. If you don't already have it, you will. It's coming your way because the wind blows right across the state line, and it will be there. Whatever happened to this old friend? Many of us thought when Roundup Ready first came out and we sprayed it, and the weed that we most often missed was Morning Glory. It was a very tolerant weed, not resistant, very tolerant weed. If it got too big, got three or four leaves on it, we just couldn't control it. So what's happened to it? Why is it not resistant? Why did it not become one of the first ones? This is the key to the species that's going to be resistant. Something that has a lot of genetic diversity. Something that's cross-pollinated. Morning glories are not. Morning glories are self-pollinated. Something that has high seed production. Morning glories don't have high seed production, relatively speaking. So you would think that maybe morning glory, because it's hard to control, would be a major candidate for resistance, but it appears that's probably not the case. So where are we and where are we going and what's down the road? We're going to see something that fits this mode with high genetic diversity, something that produces a lot of seed, and something that's cross-pollinated. Look into the crystal ball real deep. My crystal ball says barnyard grass. My crystal ball says barnyard grass. Certainly we've identified some others, but barnyard grass fits this weed, cross-pollinated, high seed production, a lot of genetic diversity. Now, if we look at, we cut out the one slide on that. Barnyard grass resistance on this one, though, if we look at it, we see how many different modes of action it's already become resistant to. This is worldwide. Notice that glyphosate is not on this list. No glycines. The synthetic auxin, that's the quinclorax, or the facets of the photosystem 3, that's the propanols, and then you go through the chlorosetamides, that's the dual thalasso, on and on. You can see these for yourself, but glyphosate is not on there. I predict it will be on there soon. We're initiating a pretty extensive study trying to get some handle on this. I guess I'd just ask this question. Get your clickers. I want to see what you say. Let's click on this one. What percent of the acres that you manage for resistance using a pre-plant or a pre-emerge herbicide in cotton? Using a pre-emerge or a pre-plant? Pre-emerge or pre-plant. Now, the pre-emerge and pre-plant, what about those, and where do we go with them? Why don't you like a pre? Don't like a pre. Not only does it cost money, but it slows us down. First off, we don't have any tanks on the tractor anymore. We're not going to put a tank on the tractor. We're going to run fast and hard because we've got bigger acres, and we're going to run as fast and hard as we can. And so we're going to put a pre out with a big rig behind the planter. That takes another tractor driver during planting. It also is unpredictable. Darned if it don't rain, they don't work. How many times have I heard that statement? When I talk about, well, let's use a pre herbicide, so if it don't rain, don't work. You're right. If it don't rain, it don't work. So what we have found is that we can use a pre-plant, like Reflex, pre-plant, and move out 14 to 21 days pre-plant, and we've got a much better opportunity to get it activated. Now, how many times you put it out 2 weeks or so ahead of planting, are you going to get a shower or rain or something between then and planting time? You're going to get a rain between then and planting. So we've got a better chance. I can use Reflex on pigweed, on Palmer. I can use Reflex pre-plant I can use Cotteran pre, and my residual is the same length of time. Think about it. So, most everybody is. Well, 39%, 40%, almost a half of a yard, or 80%. Now, this is just for my information. There is no correct answer there. Do you think that, and if we're still computers thinking. Dr. Reynolds not thinking, but computers thinking.
I never
think. But do you think that there's going to be a resistant weed that you have in your field other than horseweed and palmer? Some of you are going to obviously say, yeah, I've got ryegrass if you're from Mississippi. All right, wait just a minute before we get ready to vote on this one. Now you got your mind made up. Yes or no? Just yes or no. This is not rocket science. Now, if you do suspect that you've got a weed other than these that have been identified and confirmed resistant, what should we do about it? Well, let some of us know, first off. Let your state extension specialist know. Because if we know, then certainly we can start work on this, because in order to control it, in order to manage it, we need to know things like mechanism. We need to know about distribution. We need to know about seed, soil seed bank. All of those things that go into making good recommendations for you. So I hope I'm not right, but I have a fear in my back of my heart that somebody may say, well, it may be resistant, but I don't want that publicity. I don't want people to think that I'm the one that has a resistance issue. Please don't go there. Let us know. Let us work on it if possible. So 67% of you say you do have glyphosate-resistant weeds other than horseweed and palmer. If these have not been the ones that's confirmed that we talked about, then we need to talk about them. Now, as we get into this, and if you think that you've got problems, then obviously you've got to manage them. But if, in fact, we are in a program where we don't have a problem yet, what do you think it would cost in order to implement a resistance management program that will give you some assurance? Ha, ha, ha. Some assurance. That doesn't mean that it's going to keep you from having resistance on your field forever, but how much can you sell a resistance? How much would it cost, or how good are you, I guess, at selling a resistance management plan? Can you sell a farmer on a $5 program, a $10 program, a $15 program? What level do you think that it requires, and how good a job can you do of convincing a farmer that he needs to spend this money? All right. See where we are on that.
It'll be about 15 seconds.
15 seconds. And in that 15 seconds, I'm going to talk about some probabilities here. Now, notice the program here in the pink over here on this side. Look at this screen over here. The data will come up over in just a minute. But look at this screen here. Glyphosate, 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 every Monday morning. Spray Roundup every Monday morning. Now, look at our resistance probability. This is on Palmer Amaranth. And we're going to try to do this with some other. We're going to try to put this same curve. This is one we built for Palmer. We're trying to build the same curves for barnyard grass. Now, most of you thought it's going to cost greater than $15. All right. Notice this one over here. These herbicide costs may be antiquated depending on what you're spending for glyphosate. I don't know what you're spending for glyphosate, but the probability of resistance is about 60-65% over here. If you notice that chart, in about 5 to 6 years, you get about 60% probability of developing resistance. Now, notice we only changed one thing. We changed one reflex pre-plant and dropped out a glyphosate. And when we did that, look what our probability did. Now, this completely blew me away. When we saw this, I said, wait, we better go back and look at these numbers. But this is exactly what the numbers come out to be. Look at our probability. It drops down to 30% and goes out to about 6 or 7 years by changing one time of application. So when we start managing these resistant weeds, we need to know the biology. It takes a tremendous amount of biology to put into this to build these curves. So that's the reason I say we need to know. We changed our cost about $5, $6 on this particular one. All right, so what do we see? I think we're in for a major storm. I think there is a major storm brewing up ahead, and I think that we're going to do something different. We're not going to think in the same manner that we've thought before. It's going to take some innovative thinking, and it's going to take some help from you guys to help us, to help the farmer. We're going to have to think outside the box. Same old may not work any longer. I will tell you, we're here to help you. If you need any help, we'll be your guide dog. And we'll guide for you. And we'll be right out front. And I will tell you that oftentimes when we have to step out there, we're going to take the hit. We're going to make some mistakes. And I just ask that y'all stay with us and let's go forward together on this resistance issue. It's not going away. And new technology and new chemistry is not coming fast enough to save us from this wreck that's coming on. And I hope that we don't have any farmers or consultants that are in this mode, because apparently if you walk in that plank and you don't appreciate the seriousness of this situation. So my question to you is, how serious are you about managing glyphosate resistance? And if we can help, certainly we will. Thank you.